Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Monday, December 20th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. And ladies and gentlemen, some good news. Small streams still exist in certain rural areas of the United States. Corporations have yet to privatize all small streams. That and Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it has, well, at least it was voted to be repealed. It's going to be repealed. There's a timetable for it, and very exciting. We're going to talk to John Aravosis of America Blog. I'm sure you're all aware of America Blog, and John Aravosis' work, activist work over the years. It's very exciting. We'll talk to John Aravosis about it later in the program. Later in the program also, I've been harping for the past couple of days on this Build America Bonds program that was not a part of the Obama tax deal. And more is coming out about the implications of that. There was an incredibly one-sided, I mean, if you want to know what is wrong with the mainstream media, the so-called liberal media, watch that 60-minute segment from last night on the future of state budgets. I'll probably break it down more after we talk to John Aravosis when I have more time. But this was a perfect example of, now I don't think this was I don't think the producers or the show is right wing. What they are is they are part of the establishment in this country that will follow the line of essentially the rich in this country. I mean, I don't know really how else to put it. There are two perspectives you can take. I mean, two fundamental perspectives you can take on just about every economic question that faces us today. And that is, it all boils down to, how do you define what a good economy is? I mean, technically speaking, our GDP is growing. It's not growing at the same rate that we have in coming out of other recoveries. But technically speaking, we've been out of a recession for almost a year, maybe more at this point, actually, in terms of growth of GDP. Stock market's doing well. How do you define a good economy? And when you talk about shared sacrifice, what does that mean? You know, one of the things you should ask yourself when you hear somebody talking about shared sacrifice or cuts, because we're moving into an era of austerity. And I'm not talking that's a very specific term. That is when the government decides to fuck over the average citizen. When you hear, the next time you hear some millionaire, and frankly, the first person who says shared sacrifice shared sacrifice in a news story, on a news program, in any type of conversation, who is actually asking, we need to have shared sacrifice, or pleading, we need to have shared sacrifice. I think you could bet just about everything you own that that person is extremely wealthy and will not be sacrificing. I think you can bet everything you own that that person is actually asking that of the general society. And now that I've got my tax cuts, and only rely on the government to do things that nobody would ever contemplate cutting. And to perform functions that are far more valuable to them than to you. That's when they'll ask for shared sacrifice. You know, it's the equivalent of, and frankly, I don't mean to be offensive to all of us, to use the analogy of me and my daughter, and me being the wealthy, and my daughter just being the rest of Americans. But it is sort of that, there is a quality of that relationship, because on some level, we're getting played in the same way that I can play my five-year-old daughter. And it's really the functional equivalent of this. Sit down, we all sit down for dinner, and let's just use for the example of this delicious chicken pot pie that we buy frozen for $14. It's fantastic. It's like gourmet chicken pot pie. And between Nikki and I and Mila, we eat the whole thing in any given sitting. Nikki gets her big piece, I get my big piece, Mila gets her big piece. And there's one or two pieces left over. And so I have another big piece. And Nikki has another big piece, and Mila's still working on her big piece. And I manage to finish my two pieces before Mila does. And it's the functional equivalent of me saying, hey, listen, we've all got a share. I've got no piece, and you still have a piece. We've got a share, Mila. Let me just have two bites of your piece. Or three bites. We've got to share now. Now that I've eaten all of my piece, and my piece is no longer on the table. And you've been too busy because you're five to notice that I'm screwing you over. Now I'm going to call for shared sacrifice. So when you watch the 60 Minutes and you see Chris Christie, who's obviously had his share of the piece, and is working on behalf of those who will make sure, we've saved your piece somewhere else, Chris Christie. When he starts talking about shared sacrifice, he's coming for your benefits. Or he's demonizing some group that the right wing has been systemically, actively demonizing for the past 12 to 15 months. When Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles, two foes of Social Security, which I will remind you because you must understand, does not contribute a dime to the deficit because it is fully self-financing. Of course, now we can argue that, and they will, with this tax cut deal that Obama has put in there, that it is actually draining from the general fund, I think for the first time in the history of our lifetimes. Because there's going to be a 2% payroll holiday. We'll talk more about this later. Understand that they're treating you like a five-year-old and they're coming for your piece of the chicken pot pie. And the question is, will you continue to act like a five-year-old and be like, okay, Daddy. I love you, Daddy. You tell me funny stories. Here, have the chicken pot pie. I don't know any better. Daddy. We will talk more about this and all the indications that are suggesting that Barack Obama is going to announce his assault on Social Security at the State of the Union address. Before we do that, I'm going to try something. There's a bunch of backlog stories I have. I want to race through those. I want to do it quickly. So we're going to try it this way and see if it works. That's the beauty of this podcast, folks. It is supported by you through your purchasing a membership, which I'm not going to beg you to do, because that would be untoward. And I'm not going to plead with you to do. I'm just going to say we must all have shared sacrifice. Your membership does pay for this show. Short of our one sponsor, Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop, where you can go and get a 10% discount. And frankly, I love Just Coffee. I drink Just Coffee. Now Evan and Dorsey drinks Just Coffee. I love the company because it's completely fair trade. I love the company because it's all owned by its employees. And I love the coffee. And it gets you a 10% discount. That is win, 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 win. I will not take penis enlargement medication ads because they won't give me free samples. Yeah, because it's stupid. And there are other things that I just won't do. LifeLock, they're fucking thieves. Or I should restate that so that they don't sue me. There's a lot of complaints against them, and there's a lot of lawsuits against them from what I understand. And so your membership makes this show possible. I mean, period. And, you know, we're still technically running at a deficit. But, you know, we're projecting out. And hopefully, you know, in addition to being completely psyched to be on Ring of Fire radio, you know, one of the things that I was like, well, okay, this is going to help subsidize The Daily Show. Not The Daily Show. Not Jon Stewart doesn't need my subsidies. This Daily Show, The Majority Report. And you guys are the only source of funding that we have. And I like that. I like that because I don't like the idea of somebody telling me what to say or not to say, or, hey, Sam, to be more entertaining, you need to do shit on, you know, Miley Cyrus or whoever. What is that? Is she?
That's a good one.
Okay. What else? What was the big story this weekend?
What was the big story this weekend?
Right. Well, that's the beauty of this entire crew. None of us have a clue as to what's going on in the world.
The movies were bad.
Dorsey
bad.
Made it to 3 parties in one night.
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty good. I'm not against parties, although I'm quickly losing faith in one of them. I'm speaking. Yes. Okay. So let's try this. Race through this news. See if this works. And here we go. The Obama administration, this from last Wednesday, has selected Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray, a vocal critic of the banking industry, to head the enforcement division of the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is according to a Treasury official. This is the guy Elizabeth Warren wanted. If Elizabeth Warren feels good about this guy, then I feel good about that guy. That's just how shallow I am. AP reports CIA granted waterboarders $5 million legal shield. The CIA agreed to cover at least $5 million in legal fees for two contractors who were the architects of the agency's interrogation program and personally conducted dozens of waterboarding sessions on terror detainees. This is according to former U.S. officials. Congratulations, folks. Your U.S. tax dollars not going to help people who will help you out, but going to make sure that waterboarders and torturers have limited legal liability in court of law. Stage set for Senate vote on New START treaty. During the fifth day of debate on New START treaty, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid filed for a cloture petition this morning, lining up a vote by Tuesday to cut off debate. And we're going to have, there you go, and a vote as late as Thursday of the treaty itself. That's good news. Rick Scott, the new douchebag, governor, or governor-elect of Florida, threatening to cut off a high-speed rail line from Orlando to Tampa. The upside? It will prevent 24,000 new jobs coming from Florida because, of course, you need to save money to help the economy to create jobs by making sure that 24,000 new jobs are not created. This falls in line with other Republican douchebags, governor-elects in Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Ohio, when, of course, you know, you need to salvage the economy by not spending money to create jobs, and we'll do that by preventing new jobs from being created. That's the way they think. The Air Force, I don't know if I did the story, but I think I did. But if I didn't, here it is barring its personnel from using work computers to view the websites of New York Times and 25 other news organizations and blogs that have posted secret cables obtained by WikiLeaks. You understand what I'm saying here, folks. The Air Force is fighting to protect our freedoms and liberties. In other words, like read newspapers. And, this one I'm not going to race through. The Republicans... Forget that. The Republicans have blocked the DREAM Act from getting to the floor. Now, by Republicans, I mean 36 Republicans. What? Sam, what are you talking about?
Hey, what happened?
Yeah, don't you need 40 votes to sustain a filibuster? You do. Max Baucus and John Tester of Montana. Tester really hurts. Kay Hagan of North Carolina, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, and Mark Pryor of Arkansas joined 36 Republicans in blocking it. Joe Manchin, I guess, couldn't vote for Don't Ask, Don't Tell or the DREAM Act because he had a Christmas party to go to. It's part of the Christmas spirit. Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas, everybody. To make sure I don't get tainted by voting for the gays of those Hispanics. Merry Christmas. Feliz Navidad.
John Tester, I don't understand that. Except for, I guess, hating on the Hispanics must be a good recipe to win re-election. That's the only thing I can tell you. He's up for re-election. He must have determined that it's a good way to re-elect, rather than going out there and saying, hey, what do you have a problem with immigrants?
Well, because they suck the system dry and they don't work.
Well, this is to send people to college, which would virtually guarantee that they would pay back into society. In fact, the Office of Budget Management have found that this would actually save the government money, create literally billions of dollars in economic activity. It would help us. Every research has shown there's a net effect.
Well, don't jump to the front of the line.
Well, they're actually in the country already because their parents brought them here.
Well, it's an incentive for people to risk their lives, for bring their children here, and for them to force their children to be model citizens and want to join the military. They're brown!
I mean, honestly, I can't even think about what goes through the minds. This is where I would love to take phone calls. Because just to find out what's in the minds of these nut jobs would be interesting. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We'll be talking to John Arvosis of America Block.
Yeah.
Okay, we are back on the phone from the Uber blog, America Blog, and America Blog Gay, for that matter, John Aravosis. Welcome to the program, John.
Hey, Sam.
How are you?
Good. A little tired.
I would imagine. So, this repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, tell us about it. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, it is. As we've been telling everyone, repeal has not happened yet. You know, this basically put repeal in the hands of the president and the Defense Department.
Right.
Even though legally that didn't happen because a president can't repeal legislation under the Constitution, but basically it did. So it's going to be up to them next year to figure out what comes next. So I think there's still going to be a lot of wrangling. You know, we've had concerns whether they were going to come up with some cute separate but equal thing with, you know, those blasted showers, you know.
Right.
Dangerous showers.
Right.
So we're still really worried about what they're really going to come up with, but it's still a hell of a step forward, because we would have had nothing. If we didn't get this, we'd be dead next year with the Republicans in the House.
Right. So this is really just about how they're going to execute the process.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's about how they're going to execute the process, but it actually permitted us to have a process. I mean,
right.
A lot of us were not really happy when we heard that this was the bill, because we were hoping we were going to have an actual repeal bill. You know, the White House basically caved and said, no, that's all we're getting. And in the end, you know, it was take it or leave it. And it was better to take it than not, just because it did. It preserved the chance for us next year. And actually, I would throw one more point. The fact that everybody is so confused and thinks this is a repeal bill, I think, works to our advantage now. At first, I was worried because I was like, folks, we're getting screwed. But now, even Admiral Mullen, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, has called this a repeal bill, which means if they don't repeal this next year, it's going to be a pretty big explosion, I think.
Right. And this doesn't necessarily stop any of the legal cases, right? I mean, now you have Secretary of Defense Gates, who has said we need this bill because otherwise we're at the mercy of the courts, who could just flip it in a second. And now, in some ways, it's still, the court cases still provide an incentive for Gates to move, right?
I mean, I think you're breaking up on me a little bit, so tell me if I'm breaking up on you here.
No, but, I hear you.
Okay, good. The legal cases, you know, they should still proceed ahead, and actually, you know, well, for the reasons I said, which is we don't know what's going to happen, you know, over the next year or two. We don't know whether they're going to try to exempt the Marines, whether they're going to exempt combat forces, whether they're going to have implementation happen over a 3 or 4 year period just conveniently into the next presidency. Is it President Obama or is it President Palin? You know, I mean, we need to sort of get this thing done in the next year or so, I think, the next year and a half max. So the legal cases help because they keep pressure on the administration, and frankly, we may just win.
Right.
You know, so I think we've got to keep the cases up. I mean, to that degree, I was a little nervous when I read this weekend that the campuses are starting to let ROTC back in, ROTC. Because, you know, they banned ROTC years ago to show support, basically not even just to show support, because they don't allow discriminatory agencies and businesses to come on campus. And, you know, and only pick certain students versus others based on, you know, who they are. And now they're starting to let them in saying we won. Well, you know, we didn't win yet. Having said that, it does give us the chance, if they screw us next year, to put the ban on ROTC back in, which frankly would put more pressure.
Right.
So I think no matter how you look at it, we're still in a much – I mean, this was a big win no matter what. It really was.
Well, I mean, talk to me a little bit about it in terms of – I mean, you know, from a personal standpoint. I mean, because I think, you know, this is one of those interesting things where it's a it makes me very proud to be a liberal, because, I mean, frankly, for me personally, it doesn't make a difference whether or not although I guess you could argue that it makes us less secure. But frankly, you know, I think we could lose half our military and still be as secure as we need to be. But, I mean, for me personally, it doesn't affect my life in one significant way or another if gay people can serve in the military. But at the same time, I think, you know, and I think this is true of many liberals, but people are very invested in this because this is a step forward in terms of civil rights of our fellow citizens, becoming full-fledged citizens. They're not there yet, But it's certainly a step in that direction. I mean, talk to me about this from that perspective.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, I think there are multiple layers to sort of the civil rights aspects of this. First of all, obviously, there's just the soldiers themselves fighting.
Right.
You know, and it's not even civil rights for them. They're on the battlefield. They're putting their lives down on the line for us, and they're having to worry as to whether someone's following them, snooping on them, everything else when they're trying to get their job done. You know, I mean, that's not even civil rights. That's just it's more than basic fairness when you're talking about somebody who's literally willing to die for you, and you're, you know, following around after them, chasing them, and snooping and everything else.
Right.
So I mean, this just simply makes the lives of, you know, potentially 60,000 troops. I mean, no one knows the exact number for obvious reasons because they're closeted. It'll, you know, they can't be out. It makes it a lot easier once this goes through. The larger civil rights aspect is simply, you know, your country telling you that you're not good enough to die for it. And I know that sounds kind of a twisted way, especially for liberals. You know, a lot of liberals, I think, aren't really big on the Defense Department, not really big on war, but it's the more general concept of your country saying you're not even worthy to defend it. You know? You know, we're going to take some people. Some people are worthy to defend the nation, but the rest of you, ooh, you kind of give us the cooties. It's sort of the biggest slap in the face your nation can give you to some degree.
Right.
I mean, short of going into, you know, much more horrible things that happened during World War II, obviously, but I'm saying in terms of a sort of principled slap in the face, this is about as harsh as you can get.
And do you think, I mean, what do you think the implications of this will be for marriage equality? I mean, do you think this, I mean, my sense is that, you know, from a technical standpoint, you know, and from, I guess, not even so technical, but from a literal standpoint, this isn't a repeal. But there certainly is a perception that it's a repeal. And there certainly is a perception that, like, you know, that if the military can do this, the rest of society can see gay people as being, you know, worthy of full citizenship.
I think, you know, again, that's sort of the more practical aspect, is just looking at it and saying, yes, you know, if the military can do this, others can. I think there's a larger impact you have, which we saw when blacks were integrated into the military, that it had an incredible effect across the country in terms of, you know, taking men and women from sort of every slice of life in every city and every state around the country and mingling them and getting them to know each other and realize that we're all Americans had an incredible impact, you know, when those guys went home. And just so you've got that aspect, too, of all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but over the years, everyone in the military from all over the country are going to realize that, you know, we're all Americans, we're all normal, and we're all good people. That's a great thing to have happen, and I think it impacts. Well, I mean, hell, it'll impact those guys when they go home and they hire people. I mean, it's just important. You know, on gay rights overall, I don't really like to draw the distinction from the military thing and saying, yeah, we're going to get marriage or something, because that wasn't the point, and it's also a great way to kill it from happening.
Right.
You know, the military bed's like, it's not about marriage. I think that any victory we have starts to tell the courts that this might just be prejudice we're talking about. It's not just, you know, how do you argue that there's a rational basis for, I don't know what, anti-gay law when the government starts providing benefits here and there? You know, when they start having marriage in Massachusetts and, what is it, four or five other states,
right.
I can't even keep up, you know, how many there are every day. It just starts to, the more rights you have, the more it suggests to the courts that, or actually the more evidence it gives to the courts to say, these are civil rights we're talking about. There really isn't a rational basis for why you're discriminating because X, Y, and Z is doing it, and they're fine. You know, whereas up until now, so I mean, that's the impact as well from the military decision. Is it is the government signaling that, you know what, you're not a bunch of pedophiles. I mean, to put it as bluntly as possible.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I think that don't ask, don't tell is not about marriage, but marriage is not even about marriage. I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, the right wing is correct about one thing. Their concern about marriage equality is not just marriage. It's that society will acknowledge that gay people are just like people, you know, that gay people are people, and that they're normal. And I think that is really, at the end of the day, what all of this is about.
Right. No, that, I mean, it's you know, they almost don't want to put it as blunt as it is, which is, you know what, if you hire a black guy, you might just realize that he's a nice guy. And right. you might go to lunch with him and everything else and become a friend. And there's lots of implications beyond the fact that you're giving him a paycheck. You might actually discover that he's a nice, normal human being. That he is a human being, period.
Right.
I mean, that is an incredible revelation for people who are racist. And I think that happens with every step forward on any civil rights. Well, it's not even just civil rights. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a matter of just humanity in general. The more you get to know people, hopefully the more you get to realize, you know, they're like you, other than a few people like maybe John McCain. But
yeah, well, let's talk about – I want to talk about some of the players in this, okay? Because I'm having a hard time – I'm having a hard time with this one. It really appears that one of the – hero may be a strong word, but one of the – one of the big allies in this, or gosh, I don't even know how to put this, is Joe Lieberman. It's hard for me to even say it. That, but I owe Joe Lieberman an apology. I still, you know, and God bless Alex Perrine at Salon.com. It's okay for me still to hate him because I do on many other reasons. But Joe Lieberman actually. Was a force behind bringing this up? I mean, or was he just posturing?
No, he. From everything we heard from our sources on the Hill, he really helped broker this deal. He was really working with Collins over the last. I mean, I'm sure before that too, but over the last several weeks, he was constantly working with Susan Collins to get her on board. You know, who was a moderate. Well, she calls herself moderate, but Republican
right.
senator from Maine, who really was the linchpin for whatever reason. It seemed that wherever Collins went, the rest of the sort of the moderate crew of Republicans were going to go. So if we couldn't get her to buy off, they weren't going to buy off. So, people have been asking me this, and I'm saying, you know, yeah, he really played an important role in this, and he came through. I mean,
wow. You know,
there's no other way to spend.
Now, how do you explain John McCain?
The McCain thing is really weird. I mean, it's really weird, you know, for a number of reasons. I mean, and I mean, this is, I guess, once again, his chief of staff is gay. Now, I knew his chief of staff was gay before because I knew the guy. But apparently he's back in the job again. Now, mind you, this guy was his chief of staff back in the 90s, which means he's had a gay chief of staff for a long time. And there was a break in the middle because I think he went to work for a lobbying firm or something. But, you know, top guy in his campaign, these are openly gay I'm talking, okay? You know,
right.
Top guy in his presidential campaign, openly gay. Again, friend of mine was his lawyer and or treasurer. You know, great guy, actually, was on HRC's board for a while, the Human Rights Campaign. But McCain has been surrounded by senior openly gay advisors. We're talking to the point of he's met their partners, he's cool with it. And he could play the game of saying, well, the military is different, and I'm sure that's what he did with them. You know, well, this is different. This isn't about gay rights, it's about the military. But when you look at the speech he gave, talking about how, oh, the liberals in their Georgetown salons are going to be so happy about this, you know, Georgetown salons. Now, I'm assuming he doesn't mean hair salons,
right.
But he's you know this like what is this the 1960s that we all get together at Truman Capote's house and have cigarettes and talk about Sartre or something? I mean, it struck me as a little bit of bigotry involved in that comment. I think.
Right.
You know, I mean, his own chief of staff is probably celebrating this. You know, one of the top advisors on his presidential campaign, he knows, is celebrating this. His wife and daughter are celebrating this. It's weird for the guy to be so viscerally angry about this. I'm not sure what's motivating him. I mean, he was getting better years ago, you know, and then he became a nut job for the campaign.
But of course, Lindsey Graham. Oh, excuse me. Could you shut that, please? We got a sound problem in here when we open up the closet.
Sure.
Lindsey Graham. Oh, sorry.
Right.
Lindsey Graham also was fought against this.
Yeah, the Lindsey Graham thing is fascinating because who knows what's motivating him? You know, I mean, there have been rumors and accusations for years that he's gay, and God knows he sets off. You know, my gaydar absolutely gets set off around Lindsey Graham. I couldn't tell you he's gay. I could tell you that I never met a straight guy that's been that gay before. Certainly, you know, seeming, absolutely, I can say that. You know, there have also been talk as to whether Graham was threatened by McConnell. You know, in all sorts of rumors that are out there about not this time around, but I mean recently. You know, McConnell had threatened him that if you know, if you don't join us on whatever legislation we're going to start telling people who you are and all sorts of bullshit. Is it true? I don't know. But you know, it is always possible that somebody is disagreeing with you just because they legitimately disagree, especially like on the military thing. I could see somebody saying, oh, no, militarily, I just think it's not wise, blah, blah. Graham did not go off on any vitriol. McCain went on such vitriol that it really made you think of cranky, bigoted old man.
Yeah, you know, the only other thing that it made me think was that these guys are the classic guys who like to make themselves the fulcrum of the Senate. I'm talking about McCain, Graham, and Lieberman. And here's a situation where they're, you know, you've got, you know, the top military brass asking for this. You've got a Republican Secretary of Defense asking for this. You've got 70% of the population asking for this. So there's a certain amount of, this is really not such a hard vote in the end of the day.
Correct.
And then I start to think these two guys, these three guys, have been motivated at every aspect of their entire senatorial career of positioning themselves in such a way that they have the most power possible.
Right.
So they have this gimme vote on some respects. You know, no one's going to look at McCain's already lost his sort of bona fides in a way of being a moderate. It doesn't matter. He's got 6 years to run. He's never going to be running for president again.
No.
But how can they strengthen themselves in the coming years when the Senate's that much closer and their power actually increases because they're willing to do just about anything to increase their power? Well, Lieberman going back to the Democrats and saying, look at me. I'm a champion of one of these liberal positions. I'm a real liberal after all. And McCain going back to his people saying, look at me. I'm a real conservative after all. I'm actually using Limbaugh's rhetoric. Not echoing it, using his actual word-for-word rhetoric.
Right.
This is going to set me up for when I become, you know, that gang of four again or whatever it's going to be, gang of six or whatever. This is the predicate to that. That's why I think to a certain extent there was a little bit of theater going on here. For Lieberman and McCain to be on such diametrically polar sides leads me to believe they're setting up for Act Two.
Look, there's always theater involved in politics. Sometimes it's legitimate. I think when Kennedy got up there, he was fighting for real causes. But, you know, I'm sure Kennedy was doing bluster and everything for show at the same time, you know, because he felt it helped. I know McCain, you know, I worked on the Hill for a Republican 20 years ago, and I remember when he and McCain would battle it out on pork and stuff in these hearing meetings, insanely yelling at each other, red-faced. And they'd walk out of the room, and behind the scenes, you know, behind the door when they walk out, all of a sudden, they put their arms around each other, smiling and laughing. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, it was all for show. Now, it doesn't mean they didn't believe in the issue they were fighting.
Right.
But the bluster was definitely for show.
Now, the thing is that McCain changed his position on this rather in a fairly short period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there was no new information in the past 2 years that would suggest that there's a bigger problem with having a removal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right. No, the new information of the last 2 years is John McCain lost his life's dream to President Obama to be president.
Right.
And he's dicking back to get even. I think that's what was going on. John McCain was fighting the election again. I'm going to be the big honcho by beating Obama on one of his top issues.
Well, John Aravosis, thanks for joining us.
thanks, Sam.
What was that? Oh, sorry.
I said, and John McCain was taking on Obama, and he lost. Ha ha.
Right.
I tweeted this weekend, John McCain's fallen, and he can't get up.
Well,
not mocking the elderly.
I understand, of course. Just the crazy. John Aravosis from America Blog, thanks so much for joining us, John.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just about 10 seconds. All right, folks. And I guess there was a new organization that was set up by Media Matters called Equality Matters, which is a communications war room for gay equality. Interesting. I think my guess is that on some level they were waiting for this issue of Don't Ask, Don't Tell to be out of the way. And a great story, the rainbow belongs to us, not the gay rights movement. This is a leader of a national organization for marriage called National Organization for Marriage, which I guess the idea is that, of course, you know, if gays marry, then marriage is icky, and we'll have to have a new thing called marriage. I don't know what the lunatics are. That's the one upside of. That's not really an upside of the Republican resurgence, is that the lunatics, they now come out and they're looking for their due. So they, you know, because they went underground for 2 years from 06 to 08, completely underground. You couldn't see any of those people talking about anything. But now they come back out. They're pissed because the rainbow, we can't simply let that go. Families put rainbows in their children's nurseries. Little Christian preschools have rainbows. Noah's Ark and all the animals. Those are great Christian symbols, great Jewish symbols. The gay lobby does not own the rainbow, says Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. I think she has a PhD in being a nut job. She is the founder and head of the Ruth Institute, which is a project of the National Organization for Marriage, which is a subsection of the Worldwide Association of Total Crackpots. The main campaign of the Ruth Institute is, quote, "Gay Marriage Affects Everyone," a seminar led by Morris on the dangers of same-sex marriage. Among the ways gay marriage affects everyone, writes Morris, include the notions that, quote, same-sex marriage will marginalize men from the family and increase the power of the state over the civil society. Marginalize men from the family? What the fuck does that mean? If you have gay marriage, men will be less important to the family. Maybe she's anti-lesbian marriage. But if you have just two men marrying,
it makes them doubly important.
It makes them, aren't you marginalizing women? I don't understand.
The tagline for the Ruth Institute's website is simply making marriage cool.
It's, wow. And this one, increase the power of the state over civil society. Breaking news. Marriage is a civil institution. That's it. That's all the breaking news I have. Marriage is a civil institution. I mean, I don't think the word marriage should be used basically by civil society, frankly. You need a license to get a civil union by the government. That's what I think it should be. And then find a religion that will marry you, because every religion will marry somebody. And the state should only recognize marriage between two people who are not related. Period. That's it. Boom. End of story. Very easy. Now let's move on to what the theme of the next 6 months will be, folks. Maybe the next year. Two things are going to happen. Now, I got an email from somebody that was incredibly gratifying. And it was a very, very short email. But it was really gratifying. And you know, and I didn't even take down the name of the person who emailed me to. But Sam, thanks to you, I understand this. And it was a link to, from December 12th, I guess. No, maybe it was, it was just the other day, Friday, I think. To graphs of a from Global Economic Analysis. I don't know what that blog is, bloodbath and muni bonds. And I don't know if the guy trade. I don't know who. I don't know if it was a. Well, I don't know who sent me the email. And, you know, I got this stuff via Digby, via a Reuters guy. We're trying to have this guy on sometime very soon. And basically, I guess there was a huge sell-off in the muni bonds as soon as the tax deal sold. Now, why? Because the Build America Bonds program was not re-upped, and everybody realizes if you didn't do it then, the Republicans are going to let it die. And why? Because there is an active Republican idea out there, a plan pushed by on the National Review blog to essentially force states and cities to go bankrupt so that they could basically screw over their pension holders. And what you're starting to see is a coordinated attack across many different fronts, not the least of which was 60 Minutes. Now, does 60 Minutes know any better? No. You have producers who, for God knows what reason, they did a piece last night with Steve Croft on the huge budget shortfalls that municipalities and states are facing. And they interviewed Governor, right-wing Governor Christie, Republican Governor from Comptroller, yes, from Illinois. I don't know how many people they interviewed. And included in that were three or four interviews, an equal amount of interviews, of either union representatives who were the subject of the cuts or economists who describe... Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry, I'm confused. None of the interviews were from union representatives or economists or people who were familiar with tax cuts by Republicans. There was not a single person in this 60 Minutes piece, this 15-minute piece, who was carrying a message of, this is bullshit. Now, why is that the case? Do I think 60 Minutes producers are nefarious? Not necessarily. Do I think laziness can be nefarious? Yes. Do I think being surrounded by people who are rich, is that nefarious? Well, maybe in a de facto way. So I want to play. Now, understand, it was a great post by Robert Cruikshank over at Calitix the other day, tying this stuff in. California cannot go bankrupt. It's in their constitution that bondholders would be repaid before any other expenditures aside from kindergarten through 12 schools. So there'll be cuts and cuts and cuts and cuts following the repayment of loans. You cannot default on loans from California. But the Weekly Standard, I'm sorry, it's the Weekly Standard wrote this article. They want to change laws. They want Republicans to change laws. Republicans take over a lot of state houses. They have the ability to push referendums. They now control the federal house, which can actually, like, at least may probably issue a non-binding resolution. They want states to change their laws where they can go bankrupt as a means of which to basically cheat workers out of their pensions. Government workers. Yes, I said the dirty words. Government workers. Government, those evil, evil, evil government workers. They're evil. Don't you understand how evil these people are? They just want to hurt you. When they go to work, and they whatever it is, shovel something or work on
evil things as government workers. They want to hurt you. They want to hurt you. They're evil. Don't you understand it? Do you know how much money they're making? They're making so much money. They're living lavish homes on their huge pensions. Massive pensions. Just watching their money grow. They have to walk around with cash registers. Because they're making so much money. Now, it's true, firemen, cops have the highest pensions. Because all they do is go into burning buildings, fight people with guns, and then they sit around and count their money. All right, so here is Governor Christie. Now, understand what's happening. The federal government, we have no inflation problems right now, okay? There is no inflation problems right now. Federal government could print more money. They could make loans available. They could certainly spend more money right now, borrow it, to create economic growth, which would then increase tax revenues and start to pay your way out of this debt. All right, let me give you like another example. I've said this before. I will say it again. This small business, which is the majority report, I borrowed money to rent this office, to get some equipment, like one of the computers. We got the Sinclair for free. But to get the show started, I wouldn't have been able to get the Sinclair if we didn't have a show. Because I wouldn't have been able to ask everybody, hey, will you send a computer? And Sinclair responds. I borrowed more money to make money. I haven't made money yet, but I borrowed money and I've invested in this. I bought a couple of sandwiches for Evan and Dorsey. Borrowed money to buy them slices of pizza. They come in, and now we're starting to generate revenue. That's what the government needs to do. And, oh, wait a second. We need to, we want to create another membership level that we give free CDs away. I will borrow money to make a CD, to buy a CD burner. And so it may cost me $100 to buy that CD burner, but it could provide revenue for me down the road of $600, $700, $800. So let's listen to Governor Christie, who's completely unchallenged in this. I mean, honestly, Steve Croft, dude mailing the shit in, or his producer mailing the shit in. Here's clip number one.
We have a benefit problem. It's not an income problem from the state. It's a benefit problem. And so we got to change those benefits.
And what's the reaction been to that?
It depends on where you sit. I mean, I think the general public thinks, I can't believe anybody gets a pension anymore. I've got a 401k. It got killed in the stock market. I don't know what I'm going to do for my retirement. I can't believe people get a pension anymore. So I think amongst the broad general public, they've said, amen.
Well, I don't think that's actually true. I mean, listen to the rationale here. First of all, they do have a revenue problem. And a lot of that revenue is missing from the federal government. And it's going to be missing a lot more from the federal government. They're not going to be able to subsidize loans. Now, this is the same douchebag who is getting federal money to build a tunnel from New Jersey to New York that was going to create something like 6,000 jobs.
Yeah, 6,000.
And then God knows what kind of economic activity and property values would go up if you could commute into New York even easier. I mean, go check out what the average commute time is into New York City because of traffic, because trains backed up. It adds 20, 30 minutes.
Easy.
Easy.
And the idea that you could eliminate 30 minutes in your commute, if I could get into New York City, if I could get to this office, okay, which is blocks from Penn Station, if I could get to this office as quick as I could from, let's say, 110th Street on the Upper West Side, I'd be living in New Jersey right now. I don't know if I could ever move to New Jersey, but that's a different issue. So this guy rejecting federal funds for that because he wants to make a point. I don't have the money. Well, you could get loans. But then, listen, we need to create jobs in this state. Well, yes, this project would create jobs. Yeah, but what happens to those jobs after this is done? Well, those 6,000 people are going to be spending money. They're going to create more jobs. There's a multiplier effect, particularly when you give people like that jobs, because they spend that money. And here he is talking about we have a benefit problem, not a revenue problem. But there's been series of tax cuts. The Bush tax cuts, blowing a hole in our federal budget, cutting back on money sent to the states. Now, who brought that message in this 60 Minutes piece? No one. That's right. No one. Zero. And then Christie goes on to say, like, look, we have done a very good job in demonizing federal workers and government, state workers and city workers to the point where by making sure that we've destroyed private unions, conservatives, he's a movement conservative. This is one of the guys who was a hack who was doing political bidding for Karl Rove as a U.S. attorney. And then, of course, also spending money at the Ritz as a U.S. attorney, one of the most lavish lifestyles of one of the federal U.S. attorneys. Part of this to destroy the private union sector, unions in the private sector, destroy people's pensions, and to set up with the notion of like, yeah, we've managed to create enough anger amongst the public against people who have pensions. So it's class warfare. When you have a problem with wealthy people who get tax cuts, it's class warfare. When you have a problem with someone who has $10 million in assets having to pay more than 35% on every dollar after that to give to their silver spoon children, it's class warfare. When the government still functions to provide support and benefits for the rich and for the corporations, and you complain about that, that's class warfare. But when you look at a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, and you look at what their pension is, the fact that they get a pension, and you resent it, that's not class warfare. That's being an American. The average pension of an AFSCME union member is $19,000 a year. 80% of that is contributed by the employee. And so when you demonize them, that's not class warfare. Government workers, from municipal, state, or federal, doesn't matter who they are, they get paid commensurate with their education level as in the private sector. This is bullshit. Not to mention, forget about just the basic fairness. This austerity that is coming from these people is going to make our economy significantly worse. Let's play clip number two.
Listen, you know what it is? I'm the first person to expose them for what they've been doing to the public.
You want the public employee unions to share the pain?
You bet. I want them to share in the sacrifice. And this is what I say to public sector unions. Listen, you can boo me now, but I'm the first governor who's walked into this room in 10 years and told you the truth. And here's the truth. If you don't partner with me to get this done, in 10 years you won't have a pension.
Well, that's bullshit. Now, understand what a pension is. A pension is me saying to Evan, I'll give you $5 a week right now. Or I'll give you $4 a week, and I will defer $2 a payment for when you're done working. That's what it is. That's what a pension is. It is a deferred salary payment. And the reason why Evan takes that is because they're like, oh, I get $2 later as opposed to $1 now, I'll take that deal. The reason why I do it is because I look at my actuarial tables and I can say, okay, I can put 40 cents in now. It will grow to cover $2 a week, a month, or whatever, a year for Evan. And I can make that same deal with Dorsey, and Dorsey may not need it for as many years as Evan, and I'm going to save money. I'm going to be able to cover it. Now, what has happened is states gave tax cuts. The federal government gave tax cuts instead of funding these pensions. So they basically said, I'll make a deal with you. I'll pay you less now. You'll get more later. And then what we did is we fucked you over. And I want to know, I want to hear from Governor Christie, what is the shared sacrifice? What are the millionaires in his state? What are they sacrificing? What are the people who are making over $700,000 a year? What are they sacrificing? We're going to have less cops in your neighborhood. How about that? How about we'll have less cops in your neighborhood? How about we're not going to run infrastructure to your private schools? Those last miles of water service to your private schools, we're not going to provide that anymore. We want payment for those. Hey, you know that copyright protection that you want? Mm-mm. No. You know the road upkeep that you need so that your trucks can go and make deliveries? Uh-uh. Not paying for it. You know those zoning things? No, none of that. I want to know what sacrifice corporations and rich people are making in this instance. I want to know. There's no sharing of this sacrifice. Screwing over people with a $19,000 pension. Because you want to drag everyone down to the level that your complete attack on unions in the private sector has left the middle class. It's bullshit. Alan Binder in the Wall Street Journal last week, real average hourly earnings, excluding fringe benefits, now stand roughly at 1974 levels. No real increase over 35 years. Productivity since 1978 in the non-farm business sector is up 86%. Who do you think is making up the difference there? You got 86% more productivity, and wages have not moved in 35 years. Somebody's pocketing that money. Somebody's pocketing that money. Corporations and their shareholders. Unbelievable. And if tax cuts were so healthy for the economy, I said this the other day. Here's the specific numbers. From January 2001 to January 2009, total non-farm employment increased from 132,469 to 133,549. That's 1 million jobs in over 8 years, or 11,000 per month. It's what your tax cuts got you. And now we have reports that Barack Obama is planning to cut Social Security or to announce it as a preemptive move in the State of the Union address. It's total bullshit. And, you know, this is where I get off the train, the bus, the questioning of why is this guy such a bad negotiator, and move into maybe he's not just a bad negotiator when it comes to preventing cuts. Maybe he just thinks it's a good idea to cut Social Security. All right, folks. That's all the time we have for today. You can IM me at Cedar MVS or I don't know why I say that one. Majority FM. Soon, probably around the beginning of the year, we're going to sequester the second half. Some stories I'll be talking about in this post-show. So make sure you become a member soon. And just sent out a whole batch of member swag. Remember, if you have ordered a mug, you have an opportunity to switch that for a DVD. Any DVD you want. Check out the members benefits page at majority.fm because we have a shortage of mugs. So some of your mugs may be delayed. Until we see what we got. But everything else starting to head out right now. All right, folks. See you after the break. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the sun. My darling young one. Here beside you. Right now. For our world so green. Grows cold and changes seem. And the nights get darker. Ba 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 ba. 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 Wow, well, you look at that. I don't have any IMs today. That's strange. That's very strange. People are very late to get on IM. I have one. Oh, no, there we go.
Probably some people traveling today.
People are already starting to travel?
Yeah, it seems it.
Oof. I'm going to be on Dylan Radigan show today. I forgot to mention that. Oh, gosh, darn it. Also forgot to mention that today I am going to be doing, tonight, and will you tweet this on Majority FM? I'm going to be doing Citizen Radio at UCB at 9:30. And it said Adam Green, and of course I'm such a nerd that I thought, oh, good. I haven't seen Adam Green from the campaign caucus or campaign committee. And then, of course, it turns out to be a guy from a band, like another Adam Green. And Michael Ian Black will be there. My old friend Michael Ian Black. Tell me when you tweet that, because I'm going to retweet it.
I'll put you in there and you can
Sweet.
See it.
I love it. Well done. Touche. Somebody wrote, bullshit, you would not live in New Jersey. I have a bias against New Jersey because my father used to shit on New Jersey all the time because he used to live in New York.
So I have a bias against New Jersey because my father used to shit on New Jersey all the time because he grew up in New Jersey.
Right. I mean, New Jersey is sort of like like Worcester. Majority follower. I served 9 years in the Navy. I had a master chief tell me that the military is where social experiments can be tried out because as professional sailors, we do what we're told. If we're told to serve with gays, we will serve with gays. Then society will follow what the military does because that's when personnel leaves the military. They take the ideas back home with them. I think that's exactly right. Thank you, Matthew. I, Johnny, if the president tries to cut Social Security benefits and raise the retirement age, do you think there will be a major pushback like there was on privatization? Yes, but I think the politics are harder. You know, I vote fusion in New York State because I can. But I've been I think I'm registered as a Democrat. I think it's primarily so I can vote in the primary, but I'm not even sure if it's necessary. I mean, when I lived in Massachusetts, I was registered as a Democrat. I do think I would change my registration. I think I would still vote fusion on the working. I think I would just become an independent. I'm not sure. Maybe I would register for the Working Families Party. I'm not sure. I would want an ability to affect primaries, but and I'm really starting to I'm carrying this anger to other places. I don't know. Does that sound cryptic? Noble Baker, I'm glad you got the gig at Ring of Fire, but I wonder what you think of RFK's anti-vaccine scaremongering. In my opinion, he is responsible for the deaths of children. You know, I only know that his anti-vaccine stuff in a very broad sense. I don't know the specifics of it. I do think that I personally am concerned with thimerosal in vaccines, and specifically got non-thimerosal, which is mercury, vaccines. They're available now, but I don't know if they're widely available. And you have to ask. I think a lot of the anti-vaccine stuff is very problematic because it does not seem to be founded in science. You know, I will tell you that, like, my doctors, when, you know, the swine flu vaccine first came out, they were like, don't give it to Mila until we see what happens. And it turned out to be, as far as I can tell, having far less side effects than any other vaccines. So I don't know enough about RFK Jr.'s anti-vaccine stuff to speak to it, but increasingly I am finding problems with that movement. You know, we had somebody on the Majority Report in 2004 who was talking about vaccines, who was very controversial because they also had some issues with some HIV medication. But it's also talking about vaccines. He said, you know, the time will tell. They're starting to take the thimerosal out. We will see if we see a difference in autism rates in 3 years, because it takes about 3 years for autism to 2 to 3 years for autism to manifest itself. Now, it is conceivable that some people react, and not conceivable, it's the fact, some people react to vaccines poorly. I think it kills some people. But it's a statistic, it's an odds. There's always odds. Every procedure that you engage in medically, there is always an odds. There will always be one out of X number of people who will have an adverse reaction to the procedure itself. But the question is, are vaccines worthwhile? Because one out of a million will have a reaction. But without that vaccine, 20 out of a million will die. One out of a million will die from the vaccine. 20 out of a million will die from the disease. That one is not part of that 20. That's the reality. It's a different person who will die. That's a very difficult thing for non-scientists and non-doctors to sort of emotionally accept. And if it was my child who had an adverse reaction or died from a vaccine that saved the lives of 20 other children, I don't know if I'd be able to accept it. Because every day, somebody else's child dies. Often by my tax dollars, frankly. And it does not impact my life in the way that it would if my daughter has a chest cold, frankly. So it's a very difficult thing to swallow. You know, I'm not up enough on the science to say whether or not the anti-vaccine hysteria is completely bonkers or not. But the more I read, the more skeptical I get of the anti-vaccine thing. And, you know, the problem is a lot of it also sort of falls into this sort of like, this is part of Agenda 21 by the United Nations. I mean, believe me, there's nobody who feels that the drug companies, the pharmaceutical companies are, you know, create needs and create crises that they can solve. At different periods of my life, I have been against other products that people think are banal hygienic products. Much to the chagrin of my wife or girlfriends. And probably people around me. I can't tell. I think I probably emit a French odor at times. Is that right, guys? Are there times I smell bad? Not particularly?
I've never noticed, but we're all guys, so we...
It's such a small office.
Right.
It's hard to
tell. That's the key. That's the key. It's to hire guys who are not as hygienic stickler in general too. What did Lauren tell you, Evan, when you were coming to meet me for work?
To worry about dressing up.
Yeah, Evan says to Lauren, like, hey, is it all right if I go without a suit coat? And Lauren was like, are you serious?
You're working for Sam.
But now look at me. Wearing button-down shirts every day, collared shirts, sweater vests. Got a suit coat over there. I'm going to do Radigan. Dede Fru, sick and sicker with the idea of the bond issue thing. I'll retweet it too. Thank you, Dede Fru. Sorry, man, weren't sure if you were on this week. Great to hear about the TV spot soon, though. We're here now. Thank you, Harold. Sam, what is this you just said? That Barack Obama is going to announce cuts in Social Security? I think I'm going to puke. How can we stand for this? Well, Robert Kuttner reported it in Politico. Do I think it's true? Maybe. Do I think that this is one of those things where if people make a stink about it, it will hurt his ability to do it? Yes. Do I think we should treat it as true in terms of their plan? Yes. Todd Slater, I wasn't IMing because I had nothing valuable to add. Usually doesn't stop me, I know. But I missed 90% of the show. Good to have the podcast this one. Going to have to podcast this one. FCC discussing net neutrality Tuesday. I don't hold out much hope, but I would encourage everyone to discuss this issue and contact their reps. If you talked about that during your show, sorry for being more. I missed much today. I didn't. And you're right. Tomorrow's the 21st. Shit. I meant to bring that up. But, yes, contact the FCC. I don't know. Some of this may be already baked into the cake. But I know that Free Press is delivering 2 million signatures worth of petitions to them over the past couple of days, and I think I talked about that last week. Behrzuni Lozeng. Don't Ask, Don't Repeal, LR Common Ground on Human Rights, Strategy for Opposing Wall Street, GOP plus DNC, Populist Divide and Conquer, Screw Over Public Commons Campaign. Well, my suggestion to you would be to stop speaking in code. And I think I have an idea what you're saying, but the only people you're going to read, the only people you're really going to reach with that are cryptologists. And they're not a large enough segment of the population to do anything. Frisbane, test message. Hi, Sam. Good show. I recently became a member. Oh, well then, sir, you get one of these, or ma'am. I'm exhausted and I'm hungry because what is going on upstairs?
I have no idea. It's like somebody's dropping a Volkswagen.
Right. Fantastic. Oh, you didn't hear, man? The gym opened up. Free weights. It's right upstairs. Right upstairs. Yeah, right on the floor above you. Oh, great, great, great. It's awesome. So Myla had a kindergarten breakfast this morning. Oh, you folks. Are you folks in for a treat? Are you ready for this? This is going to... if your computer short circuits with extremely high doses of cuteness, you better watch out. Because this could... this could blow your minds.
You gotta sing, kiddo.
Oh, she didn't sing.
Will you keep singing?
Maybe I can market that. SPAYF. By raising the age limit on Social Security for future retirees, I think they believe people will not be as upset by this cut. It is a cut. If it will not affect them personally, they will not get upset. Pretty sad that people can be so short-sighted. I'm afraid they're right. Look, you raise the retirement age. It's a cut. The average person at age 60 lives only 6 years longer than they did in 1900. 60-year-olds live only 6 years. The average, if you are 60 years old, the chances of you, the average age that you will now live to is only 6 years older than it was in 1900. And if you are not rich, it's even lower. Talk about death panels. Crystal Count. White House aides emailed leaders of the black community, hailed the tax cut compromise as a major victory for African Americans. Obama hosted a group of union presidents in Roosevelt Room, what participants described as a cordial meeting, which two sides agreed to look beyond their differences. I mean, there's a lot of Obama trying to sort of... There's a lot of talk of him trying to reach out to liberals. I don't care about him being friendly. In fact, when you gotta be personally charming to people, it usually means that you're fucking them over. When you have to be. Cry, Pop Phil. As a lazy municipal worker that's retired, we didn't have to wait to lose benefits. I guess they found me as a shitty worker because every year I lose more and more health benefits than I was supposed to be. The benefits supplanting an unequal wage. Yes, it was not the $3 million a year the city manager took from funding the retirement to keep the raising taxes in 1999 as the council members had an election year. You know, if they didn't want to fund emergency workers from 9/11, why did they change things for me? See, what he's saying there is that they didn't want to raise taxes for their services. They wanted to be able to provide services because everybody wants services, including rich people. But they don't want to pay taxes. And so what they do is they underfund pension accounts. Don't be a putz. The FDI has just captured, has been captured by the pharmaceutical industry, as the bank regulators were by Wall Street. Going back to the 1990s, Clinton, when the DTC advertising was on TV, made legal. We are entering a new snake oil era in the U.S. I think that's probably true. John's the one. What do you think of the Obama plan of Social Security will be? Raising the retirement age or privatization? Raising the retirement age. Privatization will happen sort of in a backdoor way. They're already pushing this notion of, hey, invest your 2% savings on Social Security taxes into a private account. It's just... Hey, Sam. Joe here. Speaking of appearance, when are you going to be bust out a bow tie? Ha ha. Sam with bow ties was the first picture of you serving the original majority report. Yes. Let me explain something about the bow tie. When we first started doing the majority report, and there was a lot of publicity, and we got on to, like, Scarborough Country. You got to remember, MSNBC was not left-wing at all then. Even Olbermann at that time was not really doing liberal stuff. He was doing, like, vaguely liberal stuff, just not doing conservative stuff. He wasn't like a liberal firebrand in 2004. He was more like a reasonable guy who was doing a lot of sort of funny stuff. Yeah. It was Scarborough Country. It was Tucker Carlson had a show. And Chris Matthews. So I was getting a Scarborough Country because Janine would not go on that show without me. She basically was like, not because she was afraid, she was going on all these shows by herself, but she's like, I'm going to get you on these shows because that's the way Janine operates. She got me on the radio. It's just the way it is. She's incredibly generous in that way and wanted to, you know, felt it was that I was a helpful voice. And so she would leverage her celebrity because they would say, Janine, we want you on. She'd go, only if you bring Sam Cedar on. So my plan was very early on, the beginning of Majority Report, when we first came out with our publicity pictures, like, I want to appear like a conservative. Like, you know, and I thought, okay, I will confuse people with what's-his-face. Carlson, Tucker Carlson. I didn't wear my glasses, really. And I put on a bow tie, and my hope was that people would go, like, what happened to that? My, that guy with the bow tie, because everybody knew him as the guy with the bow tie, right? I mean, it was famous. And then the funny thing is then Jon Stewart, like literally months later, goes on and shits on Carlson's bow tie in the fall, I think, of 04. And so we did our 04 majority report election coverage at a theater called Ars Nova, which is right next door to where the Daily Show tapes. So in the middle of election coverage, I go outside. I don't know if it was to meet someone out there or go out. I don't know why I went outside. I think it was because somebody got locked outside or, you know, we were in charge of the whole event. I was taking a break. I go outside and I see Jon Stewart out there, and I don't know what he was doing out there either. Maybe something was going on. I don't know. And he's like, you know, and I know Stewart, or, you know, that was probably the last time I've seen him in person. But well enough to say, hi, John. Hi, Sam. I mean, you know, he still wasn't John Stewart at that point. He still was, but not as. And he's like, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, good, good. And he goes, hey, sorry about the the bow tie thing. I'm like, dude, it's a joke anyways. I don't give a shit. But I was never really a bow tie guy. How about playing George Carlin's American Dream one day? You know, I've been looking for when George Carlin was on the Majority Report, and I can't quite find it. And I want to play it. Replay it this week. If somebody knows, did you come across it as you were looking at those sheets? No. I was trying to find it. Can't find it. Because I don't have complete archives, too. That's the other problem. Spaff, I agree it's a cut, but because it does not kick in until further down the road, I'm afraid that we will not be able to motivate as much as outrage. Yes, I agree. I agree. Majority follower, there's talk from our HR that they're going to take into account the 2% of our Social Security and our cost of living raised. See? Didn't I say that?
Yep.
The problem is that our bonus in 401k is based on a percentage of our salaries. Doing the math, I will actually lose money. Positive note, the executive will get a large bonus. Wonderful. Now, wait a second. Ah, I see. Filmed by HBO on the documentary. I don't know what you're talking about, Matthew. On the documentary. What's he? Did I mention a documentary? No. Wait, what did I watch the other night? Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, that HBO documentary. I think it has clips of us in our election coverage that night. Right. Nikki and I watched the documentary. Oh, the Joan Rivers documentary on Netflix. What was that? Which I heard was supposed to be really good. Fair. And I'm certainly inclined to like Joan Rivers, and I don't dislike her at all. I just didn't think it was a very good documentary. It didn't really cover, sort of like referred to her as an almost legend. It did explicitly refer to her as an almost legend, which I think, A, is maybe inaccurate, but then it never really explained what is this documentary about? Like, why am I following her? Her struggle to get work at age 72. Was that surprising that an almost legend would be struggling to get work at age 72? I mean, that's the thing that was weird about it. I think she was a legend, and she was incredibly important, and it never really delved into that history. It was strange. It was a strange documentary. What do you mean, duh, Matthew? I couldn't make out what you were talking about. Did I catch the Jets-Steelers game yesterday? I guess I didn't. Did the Jets lose?
I saw somebody on Twitter, hell yeah, Eagles.
Well, the Steelers are not the Eagles.
I thought you just said Philadelphia.
Oh, the Steelers lost. Oh. Well, did you happen to catch the Pats play
no.
Green Bay? I'm talking to Hi Johnny.
No.
Pats won. Wait, the Steelers. I mean, the Jets. The Jets. They're that team that got wiped out by the Patriots, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Were they talking trash, too, or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I think they were. Wasn't it like that great, great young quarterback playing for the Jets? No, I'm sorry. He plays for the Patriots. Right. Right. Yes, I'm sorry. Did you hear the theory that the reason why Bo Nair is always crying because he's drunk? Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. Where is that story?
He was over on that side of your desk earlier.
Okay. Look.
You really should have a post-it of him crying that you can just put on every story that's about him crying.
I wish we had like some type of poster. Oh, hello, behind us. all right, look. Here's the deal with that Bone Air crying story, okay? That may be the case. But the first story I've seen of that was from Matt Lewis, who is a right-wing... you know, I don't want to say hack, but he's the guy who I was debating on Dylan Radigan, saying, like, can't have don't ask, don't repel. A lot of things have not been dealt with. Like, what if there's got to be gay marriage in the military? You know, like, just stupid. He wrote this story. For a guy like that to write the story about the majority leader, the incoming House Speaker, that tells me one thing. This is not coming from anything other than people who are attacking Bonaire in his own caucus. You can find stories. Now, I know Mike Stark pushed it, but it was coming from the right. Stories of Bonaire's affair before the election. They are going to take him out like they took out Trent Lott. Mark my words. They will make it look like it's coming from the liberals, but the Republicans will take out Bonaire. I don't know why. Maybe because he's just an idiot. I don't know why. But they're going to take out Bonaire. Liberals are going to get excited. They got a scalp. And believe me, it is the Republicans who are doing this. Mark my words. Put this down in your date books. Remind me. I am that we said it. We'll cut it up. We'll replay it the day that he gets knocked out. And some blog is taking... If you go back, a lot of people credit Talking Points memo with driving Trent Lott out of the Senate. That may be the case, but the first story ever written about what Trent Lott said at that birthday party for that KKK guy, or not KKK guy, was it Jesse Helms?
Strom Thurmond,
sorry. I get those bigots mixed up. When he was talking about, like, things were so much better, would have been better if you became president on your segregationist platform. The first person to report that was a right-winger. That was the right wing trying to put that out there. Guaranteed. When's the debut of the Ring of Fire featuring Sam Cedar? That'll be January 8th, I believe, is the date. John Bonaire, Booze Watch, I'm telling you. Taurasi, unbelievable. Look what Rumsfeld himself just tweeted. 27 years ago, I met Saddam Hussein. There's much more to the story, this well-known photo. And then he links to the handshake photo. No explanation or anything, huh? I get the sense that Rumsfeld office, probably not really Rumsfeld. Unless he's having one of the world's strangest bouts of senility, where all he has to do is the ability to tweet. It's a verified account?
No. Really?
Somebody hacked into it. That's fantastic. All right, folks, I gotta go. Talk to you tomorrow. To get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made.